European leaders think big about solving the debt crisis.
The question is, can they agree on a plan?
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Adrienne Hill, in for Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Monday, September 26th.
Coming up, the one thing missing as leaders try to fix the global economy, consensus.
Also, protesters march on Wall Street, but what exactly do they want?
And China has a new fix for inflation. It's a vending machine.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
One of the big problems for leaders trying to fix the European debt crisis has been trying to come up with a solution that makes all 17 Eurozone countries happy.
Well, after weekend meetings of the world's finance ministers, there are reports, rumors, whispers of a solution. For more, we go to the BBC's Andrew Walker in London. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
So what do we know about this plan right now?
Well, we don't know anything for sure, but what we're hearing is suggestions that a deal is being put together which involves three key elements. One is a 50% default by Greece on its government debt, something that's been denied by the Greek government, but nonetheless, we are hearing that. Recapitalization of European banks, that's extra money to help them cope with any losses they may suffer, and using the European Central Bank to boost the effective firepower of the European Union's bailout fund, something called the European Financial Stability Facility, so that it has a total effective firepower of something like 2 trillion euros, something like $3 trillion.
Now, this has been dragging on for months, and we've heard a ton of ideas. Why does the market seem to be responding so positively to this one?
Well, the markets do seem to latch onto almost anything briefly and give it a bit of a welcome if it looks like it's moving in what they would regard as the right direction. But I think maybe there is a difference with this one, and that is we've had lots of little piecemeal things. This does look like at least it's intended to grapple with all the main fundamental aspects of the crisis.
The BBC's Andrew Walker, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Well, Europe is just part of the economic story as we start the week. The federal government is on the brink of shutting down yet again. The Senate will vote today on a short-term spending bill that's supposed to keep the federal government running through mid-November.
But so far, Republicans and Democrats have been unable to agree on the terms. The current spat involves disaster relief funding. And if there's no agreement, the government could shut down by the end of the week.
Let's get some perspective on the intersection of politics and economics now with our New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. She joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So this is turning into another one of these political back and forth stories in Washington. How concerned is Wall Street about a potential government shutdown?
Not too concerned at all. They've had a lot of Washington crying wolf this year with the debt ceiling showdown and with the elections coming. Obviously, things are at a very high pitch, and Wall Street knows that. So if there is a shutdown, it won't be a shock like what we had with Lehman in 2008 or even anything close. In fact, I talked to John Canale. He's an investment strategist at LPL Financial, and I asked him what he's hearing on Wall Street. This is what he said.
If we do go to the last minute and the government shuts down, it's not an issue for the market. It's more just another reason why the public doesn't trust Congress and doesn't have confidence in our government to get things done.
And I think that's a sentiment a lot of people can relate to. What Wall Street itself, the people who deal with money, are really concerned about is Europe. The Greek bailout is what is completely dominating their point of view and their focus.
Well, let's talk about Europe, Heidi, where the news this morning is that the European Central Bank may cut interest rates. So you're seeing what looks like a similar dynamic to the one we've got here, where the central bank is doing what it can, perhaps to make up for the inability of elected politicians to come to an agreement about what to do.
That's right, because what we've seen with elected politicians in these financial crises is that they like to hit the brakes long after the crash has already occurred. Unfortunately, that's not what people in the markets like to see. They want to see things happen in a calm and orderly way where they can have some measure of certainty. So with the Greek default, for instance, there's a chaotic way to do it, which is the current way, and there's an orderly way, and that's where people in the markets would like to see it go.
Well, quickly, Heidi, I mean, when it comes to that orderly way, as you say. Could the Greek default really end up being, if that happens, could it end up being like Lehman? Or is it really we figured out what's going to happen and it can be planned for?
Well, we know what's going to happen, but it could be like Lehman, not because of Greece itself, but because with Greece go Italy and Spain, which are the far bigger economies with far more debt. So if Greece doesn't get its bailout, everyone who is behind Italy and Spain who owns their debt is going to panic. And then we could end up with a real Lehman-like event. But if we take care of Greece, which is fully within our power, that won't happen.
Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thousands of workers will celebrate at Boeing's huge factory outside Seattle today as the company delivers its first 787 Dreamliner to Japan's biggest airline. The 787 is 3 years behind schedule, and as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, Boeing will have to sell a lot of these planes to break even.
Boeing's new Dreamliner was 8 years in the making, but it is a marvel of engineering, says aerospace analyst Wolfgang Demisch.
The airplane is the pioneer in aircraft technology. It is lighter and more efficient than anything currently available.
But all those advances in composite materials and aeronautics came at a price. Analysts estimate Boeing spent as much as $20 billion, several times what was predicted. Orders have been rolling in, more than 800 so far, but aerospace consultant Scott Hamilton says Boeing probably needs to sell 1,200 just to cover costs.
They'll get there. Of course, it takes a long time to deliver 1,200 airplanes, so you won't see actual profit on the airplane for the better part of a decade.
Boeing faces another challenge. It'll ultimately have to produce about 10 of these incredibly complicated airplanes every month just to keep the Dreamliner profitable. Right now, Boeing's cranking out just two a month. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Well, some other news now. The CEO of the Swiss bank UBS has resigned following the $2.3 billion loss at the bank from that so-called rogue trader.
Meanwhile, the top movie at the box office here in the U.S. over the weekend was the 3D version of the 1994 movie The Lion King. It brought in $22 million, its second weekend at number one.
I still remember going to see The Lion King, Adrian. I can't
this
believe
weekend?
It. No, not this weekend. I actually would like to go and see the 3D version, but I can't believe that it's doing so well, so long after the original release.
It's amazing. And it's going to teach Hollywood they don't even have to make new movies.
Like they didn't already know that. But the other thing is I'm waiting for the Aladdin 3D version to come out. I will definitely go and see that.
The Little Mermaid is it.
The Little Mermaid, exactly.
I could sing along the whole thing if you'd like.
Maybe on the next podcast. More numbers anytime at our website, marketplace.org.
This podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, online automatic backup designed for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically backs up files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other problem, files can easily be recovered. More information and a free trial by visiting carbonite.com using the code Marketplace.
A study out today from the Pew Research Center finds people get their local news from pretty much everywhere. And the findings may have big implications for advertisers. Marketplace's Elisa Roth explains.
Television is still the most popular source for local news. 3/4 of Americans tune in at least once a week, mainly for the weather and breaking local news. Only about half turn to newspapers, which are still considered the top source for local government news. And almost that many are logging onto the internet to get things like restaurant recommendations.
So we know that fewer people are congregated around any one of these news outlets on a given day.
That's Tom Rosensteel, one of the study's authors. He says breaking down news by categories shows how fractured the local media landscape has become, which has implications for advertisers.
If you're an advertiser, you need to be in more places.
Newspapers are still widely read, but the survey also suggests they're not indispensable. 69% of respondents said if their local newspaper ceased to exist, it wouldn't have a major impact on their ability to get local news. Newspapers may be in better shape than radio, though. Just over half of respondents said they use radio for local news, mostly for traffic reports. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
For more than a week, about 200 people have occupied a small green space in New York's financial district called Zuccotti Park. They've been protesting for changes on Wall Street, though it's not clear exactly what kind of change they're looking for. Stan Alcorn reports.
This past weekend, the activists calling themselves Occupy Wall Street hoped to lead a few thousand people on a march through Lower Manhattan. About 500 turned up, with nearly as many messages. Signs ranged from buy local to no such thing as too big to fail. Milo Gonzalez is one of the marchers.
There's too many issues here to represent that we can't have any one solid demand.
They've got plenty of slogans, though. There was a central theme running through the protest, that Wall Street is winning while the vast majority are losing. Ryan Burroughs drove from Pennsylvania to take part.
The wealth disparity in America is just ridiculous right now, and I'm just sick of it.
The march ended a couple miles north of Wall Street with scores of arrests. But organizers plan to continue occupying Zuccotti Park for the foreseeable future. In New York, I'm Stan Alcorn for Marketplace.
When Prince William drove away from Buckingham Palace on his wedding day, he borrowed his dad's Aston Martin. Do you remember this, the fancy car? Did you see this at all?
Yeah, sure.
According to The Guardian, sort of in the rush and excitement of that moment, he forgot a driving basic. He left the handbrake on.
Oh, no.
I know.
Ruined the Aston Martin.
So I guess, you know, the royals are just like us commoners. They may be crazy wealthy, but like us, they're imperfect drivers.
Yeah, exactly. And all commoners that I know have Aston Martins lying around in their garage.
Well, that's the part that's not like us. But ruining dad's car. Yeah. Been there. One of the selling points for developing renewable energy is job creation. Those jobs have been slow to materialize. That's not stopped many struggling towns from paving the way for whatever green jobs they can get. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Eve Tro reports.
Shoppers in the desert town of Lancaster, California, drive right past empty parking spaces near the front of a building. Here, a good spot means
shade.
What happens if you don't find a spot in the shade?
You're going to burn.
It's like walking into an inferno.
You know, it's brutally painful.
That last voice is Lancaster Mayor Rex Paris at City Hall. Even he had to park in the sun when he took office in 2008.
None of these were covered. You see, that's quite an expense.
Now a private company, Solar City, has paid for roofs on public parking. It puts solar panels on top and sells the power to the city. It's one of many partnerships that's made Lancaster's city buildings 90% solar-powered.
And we've sealed the cost at 13 cents a kilowatt.
Cheaper than the local utility. But Lancaster's got issues beyond hot cars and power bills, like high unemployment, rampant foreclosures. The last time the town really shone was the 1950s.
The Air Force rocket plane X-15 chalks up another record at Edwards Air Force Base in California.
From then until the 80s, research around the airbase filled Lancaster with pilots and engineers. The mayor thinks solar startups can restore tech culture. He's offered tax breaks and fast-track permits.
If they come here, they can get on the grid faster, is really what it comes down to.
The city's cut paperwork for residential solar, too. That helped KB Home build its new all-solar subdivision, Arroyo. Vice President Tom DePrima says it's selling.
30 homes in about 3 months.
Families can get a solar system that covers almost all their energy.
The air's running, the lights are on in this house, but when you look at the meter, it's barely turning.
But UCLA economist Jerry Nicholsberg says right now, solar power jobs are mostly short-term in construction.
Renewable energy, once it's in place, typically does not take very many employees to keep it going.
For real growth, Lancaster needs whole companies and factories. A sunny reputation is just a start. I'm Eve Tro from Marketplace.
And finally, Adrian, to China, where inflation is actually significant, unlike here where it's very insignificant. And now a vending machine has come to the rescue.
You got to explain this
in
one.
Beijing. Well, according to state media, a vending machine that sells gold has been installed in a main Beijing shopping district. So you put in some cash and out come gold coins or gold bars or whatever
kind of gold
that you want. Exactly. Well, the gold bars, by the way, though, are not to be confused with the 100 grand bars bars being offered one vending machine over.
Those are more my price point.
Those bars will continue to include chocolate, caramel, and Rice Krispie Crunch in case you're hungry in Beijing and you have a little money left over after the gold purchase. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Adrian Hill in for Steve Chiatankis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.